different level. I don't know the rules anymore or something's changed, but I can't believe it.
It's a 4-0 goal. Big cheer. Are you kidding me? What is that?
It's NHL This Week with the Illegal Curve Hockey Crew on your home of the Winnipeg Jets and all things NHL. TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Comes Ekholm across the line. He'll backhand it into where the corner. Stopped by Morrissey. Feeds it into where the middle for Tanev. One-on-one. Kicked it from his skate to his stick and across the line. Gathering speed. Going wide. What a shot. Going. Score! Brandon Tanev will give the Jets the lead. A 5-4 lead on a one-on-one. He just threw it to the net. And Tanev will score his first goal in 26 games with 1:26 remaining in the third. The Jets have a lead again. How about that? Brandon Tanev, maybe the unlikely hero here tonight with his third of the year.
You just heard it, Paulie Edmonds, Brandon Tanev, the hero from last night's 6-4 win over the Nashville Predators. The Winnipeg Jets snap their road losing streak. Good evening, universe, and welcome to NHL This Week with Illegal Curve. I'm Ezra Ginsberg. Drew Mandel is off this week, so we've brought in an old friend, Michael Remus. Remo, how's it going, man?
Ezzy, happy to be here. Love being in the studio with you. Good evening, universe. Good evening, Winnipeg. This is NHL This Week on TSN 1290.
I love it. Reem, we have to get right into yesterday's game. Arguably the best game of the year so far for the Jets, not necessarily based on the score differential, but just the play itself, the competitive nature of last night's game. There were lead changes. The Jets get out to that early lead. Adam Lowry scoring about 8 minutes into that first period. The Jets go down 2-1 after a couple of quick goals late in the first period. Then they tie it up. Patrick Laine scores 5-on-5, not on the power play. And then the Jets go down again, and then Nikolaj Ehlers ties it up. The Jets go ahead. The game's tied again. And then Brandon Tanev scores arguably the biggest goal of the year so far for the Jets. Reem, I want to start off with just talking about the performance of that third line, because I think there are a lot of people out there that think that Brandon Tanev, Adam Lowry, and Andrew Kopp are really a fourth line, but they really stepped up last night.
Yeah, and this has been coming for a long time. I tweeted this out today, and it's been getting quite a bit of retweets, and you should be following me on there, at MRemus, that's a plug. But in the last 7 games, this line, the Kopp-Lowry-Tanev line, in the last 7 games, 15 points. That's 5 goals, 10 assists. So they've almost been contributing close to a goal a game, this line. And, you know, up until, you know, the last couple weeks, we've been saying, you know what, these guys are actually pretty good together. They play better than the sum of their parts. And you look at the way they've played, and their possession numbers consistently very, very good. And we had thought, okay, this is only a matter of time. If these guys could ever finish, maybe they could start putting in some goals. And you look at the last stretch here, I think they've definitely been crucial and, you know, playing a good defensive game. But now you see the offense come where they're consistently scoring goals. And there you had Tanev yesterday with 2 points. I mean, each guy, and I said this with Huss earlier this week, or it was last week, that line, as he reminds me a lot of Nintendo ice hockey. I'm not sure if you remember the game.
Oh, yeah.
You picked a skinny guy.
Yeah.
You pick a fat guy, or, you know, the big guy, or a medium guy. Well, Brandon Tanev, he's the skinny guy. He's super fast. He can, you know, pretty much outskate just about anyone in the league, and you see them very hard in the forecheck. Adam Lowry, he's the big guy. He's very strong on the puck behind the net, good in front of the net. I mean, good down low on the defensive end. And Andrew Kopp, he's kind of like the medium guy. He's got a pretty good shot. He can skate well, but not as fast as Tanev, not as big as Lowry. He's the medium guy. And I feel like that's the Jets' third line. That's the ice hockey line.
I like that analogy. Reem, I want to play a clip from earlier today on the afternoon ride. Huss and Darren Bauming and Rick had Brandon Tanev on the afternoon ride. This is Brandon Tanev talking about his line mates, Andrew Kopp and Adam Lowry, of course, and then talking about his role on the team.
It's a fun role to play. I mean, you get to get on the forecheck and provide the team with a big hit and energy in certain situations. But, I mean, playing hard is something I've always enjoyed. When it comes to the game, I think both Adam and Andrew both enjoy the same style of play, and I think we've complemented each other very well over the past couple games and to the start of the season, you know, just working with one another, trusting each other in the situations and communicating. I think if we continue to do that and continue to play the way we've been playing all on the same page, it makes it easier for us each shift we go out there and our offensive mindset is getting a little bit more opportunities for us. But it all starts in the defensive end. You know, our coaching staff and our leaders want us to be a line that can be trusted in the defensive zone, and I think that's where it all starts.
You know, Reem, you mentioned earlier that the Kopp Lowry Tanev line has combined for 15 points in the last 7 games. Tanev's now got 3 goals and 10 points in 35 games. He only had 4 points all of last year. That was in 51 games. And, you know, Brandon Tanev was a guy that, you know, you maybe thought would have started the season in the Moose or maybe would have been that 13th forward. And I think as the season has gone on here, he just continues to get better and better. And same thing goes for the line. And, you know, when you talk about last night's game, I mean, you can't not mention Nikolai Ehlers had 2 goals. He easily could have had probably 4 goals in that game. As we mentioned earlier, Lion A scored. He's got 17 on the year. Ehlers and Lion A leading the team with 17. But really, I think the story of last night's game was that you were getting contributions from basically all 4 lines.
Yeah, and I like looking at the Corsi numbers, the advanced stats. And you look at the Jets at 5-on-5 this season in Corsi 4 percentage, you know, positive shot attempts. Who's at the top? Lowry, Tanev, Kopp. I mean, they're both in the top 5. Perreault's in there and Poolman as well. I mean, Poolman doesn't quite have the minutes, but I think it shows that those, you know, the numbers back up those guys play, and they've been very good. And you mentioned they are putting up points, and I think it's definitely helped the Jets more than we ever thought. And I agree. I mean, Brandon Tanev, he always had that speed, but you're really seeing it this year on the forecheck. He's got a decent shot. He should have another goal. I keep bringing this up because of that Scheifele disallowed goal where Ben Bishop like poked him and interfered himself. But those guys have been very good. The numbers back it up, and now they're finally putting, you know, their names on the score sheet.
And Reem, it was really just an overall team effort that won this game, right? I mean, we thought it was going to overtime. Tanev's goal comes with 86 seconds left in the game. And, you know, when you talk about this Predators team, they've been one of the best home teams in the NHL, along with the Jets, along with the Vegas Golden Knights and the Tampa Bay Lightning. And I do think this game is very important for the Jets when you talk about who they have to beat to really get to that next level. And we know that this Jets team, barring some type of extended losing streak, is going to the playoffs. And it's most likely going to be one of Nashville, Winnipeg, or St. Louis that wins this division this year, wins the Central Division. And I mean, you saw the players on the bench and on the ice celebrating. When Tanev scored that goal, it was almost like they won a playoff round.
Oh, I mean, you heard Blake Wheeler's comments after. I mean, he said it wasn't, you know, the way they wanted to play the best. It wasn't their best game, but you know what? They got it done, and that's what mattered. And the Jets have really stepped up against the top teams in the Western Conference. You look at games this year. I mean, you said yesterday was the game of the year. Well, you know what else could be the game of the year? The game against, you know, both games against St. Louis. Even though they lost in the Saturday game, they played very well. They came back and played hard Sunday and won. The game against L.A., excellent road game, eco to win. The game against Vegas. Vegas, you know, not as quite good on the road as they are at home, but the Jets, you know, put up 7 goals on them. It was a pretty impressive win against, you know, the right now the leader in the Pacific Division. So the Jets, I mean, yeah, they're on their way, Hus. I mean, sorry, on their way, Ezzy. That's one for Drew. But and I think they are a very good team. What was the thing that was interesting, you know, yesterday that we hadn't seen much of?
You can call me Hus, by the way, Reem. I have no problem with that.
No, I only do that with on the warm-up. The one thing that was interesting was that we hadn't seen was Ehlers moving up to the top line. You know, the lines have pretty much stayed the same all year. And yesterday, Paul Maurice opting to move Ehlers up. And I really like the look of the Jets with the Ehlers on the top line.
And then Kyle Connor's on the second line. Then it looked like he was back on the first line. And at a certain point in the game, it looked like maybe Maurice was trying him on all 4 lines. But I think he made some good points there, Reem. And I would also throw in the game a couple weeks back on the road against Tampa. Game in which the Jets could have easily won. But, you know, you mentioned the game against Vegas and L.A. and definitely the back-to-back games against St. Louis. The Jets could have easily got 4 points instead of 2 points. And, you know, this is a team that just hasn't been as good on the road. And we mentioned it really at the top of the segment. The Jets had lost 6 straight games on the road. Sure, 2 of those games were in overtime, but they didn't have any wins in regulation or in overtime. So to go into Nashville, to start off this road trip and get the clean 2 points, I think is really big. And I think it's going to set them up nicely here for the next 2 games. But it's not going to be easy because the Boston Bruins and the New York Islanders are playing some pretty good hockey right now. I wouldn't say necessarily that the Jets, you know, are. I would say the Jets can definitely win these 2 games, but they're games in which that you still have to take care of business because both of these teams right now are competing for those last few wild card spots in the Eastern Conference.
Yeah, and one thing you mentioned too that that I want to touch on, Nikolaj Ehlers. I mean, every game it seems like this guy is absolutely all over the ice, and it seems like every game he gets on the board, but he seems to be every game you can say, oh yeah, he could have had another goal, another point. And I think the same thing with Laine as well. I mean, so many times he has there's open looks that he just misses. I mean, he hits so many, but I think look, Ehlers, 21 years old, Laine, what is he, 19? These guys are so young, and I think the Jets, while they're playing so well now, I mean, the future is very, very bright with all this young talent in the organization.
Yeah, I agree. And when you consider that they were so good 5-on-5 yesterday, and that's been the big criticism of Ehlers and Laine. We know that these guys are uber talented. We know that they can put the puck in the net. They're absolutely skilled playmakers, and they've been producing a lot on the power play, especially Laine. More so Laine, I think, than Ehlers. Ehlers has definitely been better than Laine 5-on-5, but especially Laine, I thought, he hits the crossbar in the third period. Ream, he could have easily had a couple of goals. And I mentioned it earlier, I think Ehlers could have easily had the Hattie, maybe even 4 goals. He was flying around there. And Nashville is a fast team, so when you're the fastest player on the ice against a very fast team, that's saying something. Ream, we're going to head to break now. When we come back, we mentioned earlier the Jets play the Boston Bruins tomorrow night on the road. Puck drop 6 o'clock. You can hear that game, of course, on TSN 1290. We're going to be joined by Boston Bruins insider Joe Haggerty next. You're listening to the NHL This Week with the Legal Curve Show on TSN 1290. I'm ready. Welcome back to NHL This Week with the Legal Curve. It's Ezra Ginsberg and Michael Remus. Drew Mandel and Sean Asor are off this week. This segment of the show brought to you by Keener Jerseys. Over the past 20 years, Keener Jerseys has established itself as one of the best jersey customizers in the world. Specializing in customization services and branded team apparel, Keener Jerseys is changing the game with world-class craftsmanship and unparalleled service. If you want awesome jerseys for your rec team or have a jersey you want customized, visit KeenerJerseys.com or visit their showroom at 982 Portage Avenue. Let's hit the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
We are pleased to be joined by Joe Haggerty, Boston Bruins insider for NBC Sports Boston. Joe, good evening. Thanks very much for joining us.
Hey, thanks for having me out there in the peg.
Thanks for joining us again, Joe. We have to start with last night's game. The Boston Bruins defeated the Buffalo Sabres 3-0. Anton Khudobin picks up the shutout. The Boston Bruins are now 7-2-1 in their last 10 games. I wanted to start off by asking you about Jake DeBrusk, drafted back in 2015, 14th overall. Some thought that he was drafted too high. Of course, that year, the Boston Bruins had 3 consecutive first-round picks. He's now got 2 goals and 4 points in his last 2 games. Just how impressive has Jake DeBrusk been here this last stretch?
Yeah, he's been very good, and he's had flashes all season. He also, we all remember, scored opening night for the Bruins, and his dad, former NHL tough guy Louis DeBrusk, was in the stands for that game with his family, and tears coming to his eyes. We saw his boy score in his NHL debut. So he's had some good moments this year and some high peak moments. But as you referenced, last handful of games, and really since he was a healthy scratch about a month ago, he has been very good. He's been almost close to a point per game player, and has played much more consistently as a rookie player in the NHL and been much more productive. And he's been really an important piece for them, because he's a guy that looks like he's going to plug right in as a top six forward, a guy that might be able to get you close to 20 goals or 20 goals over the course of the season. And, he's a smart player. He's got good hockey IQ. He does some of the little things, winning board battles, getting to the front of the net, some of the things that a guy like David Krejci, who's normally played with him, needs in a winger. He brings all of that to the table. And, you referenced him getting drafted with those 3 straight picks. And it really looks like at this point, DeBrusk is the one that's the safest bet. And kind of you thought so at the time, too, given his track record as a junior, he was the safest bet to have a solid NHL career. The real question is he going to consistently be a 20-goal scorer and a top-six guy, or is he more a third-line guy? And right now he looks like the former rather than the latter.
Joe, I'm looking at the Boston Bruins stats this year, and third among scorers is One of my favorite players, Danton. Danton hit him with the Heinen. 22 points this year. I have to say that every time. But 22 points in 28 games. I mean, where did this guy come from? Fourth-round pick in 2014.
Yeah, you got to give it the more of the Howard Stern emphasis. If you got to go, you know, you got hit him with the Heinen.
I mean,
a little bit of that. Come on now.
Thanks,
yeah,
Joe.
It's a great nickname. You know, the teammates call him Heine, which is also completely humorous. So, like, you got all that stuff going on. He's kind of a mild-mannered kid. It's funny, given the nicknames. But he was a top prospect for the Bruins. Actually, obviously, a fourth-round pick. At the time, you know, there wasn't a lot of fanfare when they made that selection. And, you know, he was still a very young player that hadn't really grown into what he was going to start to become. But he went to the University of Denver after he was drafted and really dominated in college hockey and was one of the top scorers when he was there at Denver, and really kind of burst on the scene once he got to the collegiate level. And the Bruins pulled him out of that out of school early because they liked so much of what they saw out of him, you know. A guy that's a playmaker, he's got decent size, he certainly thinks the game really well, and has a lot of good offensive skills, but is also willing to play the 200-foot game. And they signed him before last season, and he had a handful of games last year. He had about 8 games at the NHL level, and it was pretty, and he won actually a job shortly out of training camp last year and started the year with the team. But it was clear he was not ready, having not played in the AHL much. And then he needed some more development time, got sent down the rest of last year, really developed his game, I think got used to the physicality and the speed of the pro level, was a point-per-game player in the playoffs for Providence. They had a long playoff run, and you know, it was kind of under the radar in this camp because everybody was talking about Anders Bjork and Jake DeBrusk and, you know, all these new sort of shiny toy prospects that were coming into training camp. He was sort of the forgotten man a little bit. But as you've seen with the numbers and the way that he's performed, you know, he's arguably been the best of all of those rookies, and he's really formed a really nice third line with David Backes and Riley Nash. And, you know, he's on pace for 20-something goals and 50-something points. And, you know, it looks like he's going to be a fixture in the Bruins lineup for a long time to come. And, you know, eventually I think he's going to get a top six look, and he's going to get to play with a few more skilled players. And I really think the sky is the limit for him, the way he competes and the skill level that he has.
We're joined by Boston Bruins insider Joe Haggerty on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline. Joe, Boston Bruins rookie defenseman Charlie McAvoy picked up another assist last night. He had a Gordie Howe hat trick a couple of nights ago in that 7-2 win over the Columbus Blue Jackets. Give us your case for why Charlie McAvoy is one of the top rookies in the NHL right now.
Yeah, I really think he's going to be one of the names at the end that you're going to see in the Calder Trophy voting. And you know, he's just a workhorse defenseman. He leads all NHL rookies in ice time. He's the only one that's anywhere close to him. He's a little bit over 23 minutes a game, and there's nobody even close to him as far as NHL rookies go. You know, he plays in all situations. He's on pace to have about, you know, 15 goals and 50 points as a rookie defenseman in the NHL at 19 years old. Only played a couple of AHL games last year. So you're talking about a player that is logging a ton of minutes, is playing with Zdeno Chara in the top pairing, so he's playing against the other team's best offensive players and has to play in sort of a shutdown role and certainly has to hold his own in the defensive zone, plays power play, plays penalty kill, you know, it provides offense, quarterbacks the power play when he's out there, and oh, by the way, you know, plays anywhere from 23 to 26 minutes a night, logs a ton of ice time, and the quality of his shifts doesn't ever go down, and you know, that's a game-changing kind of defenseman. You know, he's the future number one defenseman of this team. There's no question about it. And he's come right in and looked not just like he belongs, but dominant. You know, there are a lot of comparisons to Drew Doughty when he was drafted. And I think he looks a lot like Drew Doughty as a player on the ice with the skill level, with the ability to play physical. He's got great size, with the ability to play tons of minutes. You know, those guys don't come along very often. And you know, he's not going to be an Eric Carlson type where he's going to have gaudy offensive numbers at the end of the year. But when you look at his importance to what the Bruins do, when you look at his ability to play all those minutes and produce offensively and do everything else, you know, that's one of the most valuable guys you can have on your team. And he deserves serious, serious consideration for the Calder. Even if there's some flashy, you know, offensive-based players like Clayton Keller out there that will get some attention too, I think McAvoy is going to get a lot of pub when it comes down to the end of the year for the NHL Awards.
Drew, I want to ask you about Tuukka Rask. I mean, you look at his numbers a couple of years ago when the Bruins were, you know, winning Stanley Cup and making the finals. He was had elite, you know, save percentage. Seems like his numbers have fallen down a bit. How has he played this year, and is he still an elite NHL goalie?
Yeah, you know, obviously he struggled the first few months. There was a stretch where he was benched for four games, and Anton Khudobin was given runs for four games in a row, four starts in a row, when he was playing really well. And obviously he's, you know, still continuing to play well, given what you saw last night in Buffalo, where he had a 36-save shutout. But, you know, it was something where Tuukka Rask needed somebody to come in and bail the Bruins out for a little while, while he got his game together, while he got his head straight, while, you know, he got himself in working order and ready to go. And, you know, he's been very good since then. And I quite simply, with Tuukka Rask, I think he needs a couple things, and this is what the Bruins have found out over the years. He needs a backup that can push him and challenge him, because I think he needs a little bit of a fire lit under him. You know, he's kind of in a very comfortable situation, long-term contract, paid a lot of money, and, you know, and for a few years didn't have backups that were very good. So, you know, really didn't feel pushed in any way, shape, or form. Felt like he had the gig and there was no way it was ever going to go away from him. You know, you combine that with the fact that he's not physically the hardiest of goaltenders, and that he's going to probably need a little more rest than most number ones. You know, you're talking a guy that's probably going to play 55 to 60 games, not going to be a Henrik Lundqvist or a Corey Schneider type that's going to play a ton and really, you know, keep the performance up. What they saw was they were giving him a huge workload, and he was really wearing down, and his performance was wearing down towards the end of the season for the last few years. And so this year they're limiting him to 55 to 60 starts. And, you know, they're going to play Anton Khudobin a lot more. And I think you're starting to see the fruits of that, you know, bear a little bit in the middle of the season. I think they're going to see even more of it down the stretch. I think you're going to see a fresher goaltender that's better. Is he still elite? You can make the argument that, you know, his numbers and the way that he played was as much about the Bruins' defense being dominant and, you know, Zdeno Chara still being at the back end of his prime that it was about Tuukka Rask and what he's able to do. And as the defense has kind of gone through a transformation and gotten younger, more mistake-prone, a little more offensive-heavy now with Bruce Cassidy rather than the very defensive system they used to have around the goalie with Claude Julien. But I think his numbers have gone down a little bit. And I think he's certainly a very good goalie. But in my opinion, an elite goalie is a guy that can play 70 games a year, 65 to 70 games a year, be a workhorse, play every night the same way, doesn't wear down, will steal games for you when you need it, like does everything you need. And Tuukka Rask, I think more often than not, isn't that guy. He's a very good goalie, but I don't think he's an elite goalie.
We're joined by Joe Haggerty, Boston Bruins insider for NBC Sports Boston on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline. Joe, David Krejci was a scratch yesterday, not a healthy scratch. He's injured. He's out with that upper body injury. He's missed the last two games. He's now missed 14 games on the season. Is this just a player that can't stay healthy? And how concerned are the Bruins with that back injury right now?
Yeah, this is his third stint where he's missed time this season. And it's all because of the back injury, and he's missed almost as many games as he's played. And certainly I think it's a concern for the Bruins, and it's something that they're worried about, and they should be worried about. You know, it looks like it's something they're going to have to manage all year. And with a player like that, with a bad back, you're kind of wondering, you know, which hit is it going to be that's either going to take him out or put him on the injury reserve for a long time. And this is a player that you're paying $7.25 million a year. You're the highest paid forward on your team. You build your roster around having the two front-line centers in Patrice Bergeron and David Krejci. And, you know, he's 31 years old now. He's played over 800 games regular season in the playoffs, and I think you are seeing him start to wear down a little bit. Over the last 4 years, he's averaged 15 games missed each season, per season. And, you know, for a player that you're expecting to be in the lineup and you need in the lineup, that's too much. And I think it's just going to get more and more, obviously, as he gets older. So there's a lot of concern about managing the situation this year, you know, the fact that he's got years to come, but he's not getting any younger. But these are all things the Bruins are going to have to deal with him, and just hope that he can get healthy and they can, you know, get a decent season out of him where he plays in most of the rest of the games. Because, you know, he's got a no-movement clause from now until kingdom come, and he's not going to be traded anywhere, so the Bruins are kind of stuck with him, and they just have to hope that he gets healthy and that he can be the productive guy that he's been in the past. But once you're on the wrong side of 30, all bets are off with that stuff.
You know, Joe, final question for you here. Brad Marchand's nine-game point streak ended last night. He's up to 29 points now in 24 games after missing some time earlier this season with that injury. And considering that he's coming off of that career-best 85-point season, many thought he should have been a more serious contender for that Hart Trophy. But is this just a continuation of last year? And do you think enough people are talking about how good Brad Marchand has been this year?
Yeah, it is. And he's definitely, you keep thinking, all right, this is his career year. He's never going to get better than this. And he keeps bettering it and raising the bar every year. And it just keeps getting better and better. And you know, he and Patrice Bergeron and David Pastrnak as a line have been dynamite this year when they've played together. And they're scoring a lot of points. They go up against the other team's best line all the time. And, you know, Brad Marchand plays in every situation. You know, now he gets a lot more power play time than he did a few years ago, and that's why some of the points, certainly the assists have gone up. He's become a much better passer, too, than he used to be earlier in his career. So you really see him develop some of these other areas of his game that maybe weren't as good in the beginning, along with kind of reining in the discipline a little bit. You know, he finished seventh in the Hart Trophy voting last year. I thought that was pretty good for a guy that had never been considered in that sort of category before last season. I would expect if he's got numbers similar to last year and what he's on pace for now, he might even go a little bit higher than that, especially when you see like some of the clutch games. Like they had a win in Detroit where they were basically a dead team walking for most of the game, and then he makes a couple of plays in the third period in overtime to help them win that game. And you know, he does that a lot. And, you know, those are the kind of things that you think an MVP, a Hart Trophy type, can do. So the biggest hurdle that he has, I think, as far as the voting goes and the Hart Trophy goes, is, you know, getting people to think less about the little ball of hate, the nose-face killer, the cheap shot artist, the guy that's got suspended, the guy that's taken out players on the other, some of the best players on the other team's roster with dirty hits. I think about him less like that and more about the complete player that he's become. It's difficult to do because it's all part of a complete package with him. And, you know, I think there are some writers probably in some cities that don't want to vote for him just because of the way he plays the game. But the numbers and the impact he has is undeniable. And if he continues to play the way he is now, he's going to get serious consideration at the end of the season.
Joe Haggerty is the Boston Bruins insider for NBC Sports Boston. He's a big Howard Stern fan, and he's a good friend of the show. Joe, thanks very much for joining us tonight.
Baba booey, my friend.
All right, take care, Joe. Enjoy the game tomorrow night between the Jets and Bruins.
You too, boy. See ya.
All right, we're going to head to break now. When we come back, we're going to talk about the Pittsburgh Penguins. They made a couple of moves yesterday, but I want to know, Remo, if you think that the Penguins are in trouble. Not necessarily of missing the playoffs, but in trouble of maybe not being a Stanley Cup contender anymore. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290.
Hockey did find it. Cute play that time by Alexiak. Dances his man. Jamie Alexiak scores! Oh, my! He set his own agenda! The big rig, like a mammoth pixie, walks in and cuts the lead in half.
It's the first one, and the second one you may get away with, and you don't usually finish it off, but Jamie Alexiak shows everything. Beats a couple of the Blues players and then finds a hole in Allen. That's exactly what the Dallas Stars needed to drive a little bit of life into these guys.
Are we setting our own agenda, Remo? I don't know, but welcome back to NHL This Week with the Legal Curve on TSN 1290. I'm Ezra Ginsberg, joined by Michael Remus. Drew Mandel and Sean Assore are off for the week. This is actually the last NHL This Week of 2017, Remo.
Yeah, can we talk about our top moments of 2017 now, Huss? I mean, as
well, if you keep calling me Huss, I think Rory's going to have to take over for you here.
Man, I don't know. It's reflex. Like, Huss rolls off the tongue. I've done this with Drew. Drew's going to love this.
And by the way, the top moment of 2017 is last night's goal by Brandon Tanev. So there's no discussion, really.
Yeah, might have to be.
Maybe Brad Marchand's game-winning goal for Team Canada at the World Cup. I guess that was 2016.
That's 2016.
So I guess we can't have a moment from 2016 in the top moments of 2017, can we?
Yeah, I mean, think about a Winnipeg Jet moment. Yeah, maybe we'll have to go into the treasure chest and think of something else, Ezzy.
Okay, I know you're doing it on purpose now. Reem, I want to talk about the Pittsburgh Penguins this segment. The Penguins are actually out of a playoff spot right now, believe it or not. The Penguins are sitting in well, right behind the last wild card spot. That would be ninth place in the Eastern Conference with a record of 17-15-3. They've got 37 points. They're 2 points behind Columbus for that last wild card spot. Pretty amazing that Columbus is holding down that last wild card spot, Reem, when Columbus was leading that Metropolitan Division with New Jersey just as recently as 3 weeks ago. You know, we played that clip of Jamie Oleksiak coming out of the break. They acquired Jamie Oleksiak from the Dallas Stars in exchange for a conditional fourth-round pick. They also acquired goaltender Michael Layton from the Arizona Coyotes. Yeah. There were some draft picks involved. Josh Archibald went to the Arizona Coyotes. Let's be honest, though, that these trades are not major trades. I think at this point, Jim Rutherford is just trying to shake things up any way he can. Reem, we saw them acquire Riley Sheahan from the Detroit Red Wings earlier this season. That was back in October. I mean, I want to know whether or not you think that this team is in trouble. And I still think they're going to make the playoffs. I want to get your opinion on that. But do you think they're in trouble in terms of not being a Stanley Cup contender anymore?
Yeah, I'm going to say no. I mean, you look at their team, they have the big hammers. I mean, they have Crosby, Malkin, Kessel, Letang when he's healthy. These are elite NHL guys. So you need to find the right mix of depth guys around those players. And, you know, they lost in the offseason. They lost Hainsey. They lost Bonino. They lost Marc-Andre Fleury. I mean, they lost a couple pieces. You know, there were big parts of their Stanley Cup winning team. Now it's up to GM Jim Rutherford to say, hey, look at their team now. It's not in a playoff spot. What can we do? And, you know, you don't need to go around and make a big trade. You need to find a guy, maybe that undervalued player who can go and help you and be on your team. Because you have guys like Crosby, you can pretty much prop up anyone. You have guys like Malkin. Now, their top two lines have pretty much been the same. But, I mean, you go make a trade for a guy like Jamie Oleksiak, a former first-round pick. We saw him at the draft in Minneapolis. And you have to add Penny Oleksiak, brother, Lou Marsh Award winner from last year. And this guy is a massive guy. He is a huge defenseman, and you think that his size you can put him in a better role and in a better system, and it'll improve you. Why not go take a chance that doesn't cost you that much? So I think Jim Rutherford, he's shown this last couple of years as he's a really good GM. He's not afraid to make trades, and he pretty much rebuilt their team last year. So he knows how to find players, and he'll make the necessary adds, and probably won't be that won't cost them very much because they're not looking for top guys. They have the top guys. They need to find the right bottom guys.
I agree with you, and I think that Rutherford will make some moves closer to the trade deadline in the end of February. And I think another point to make is that the rumors are out there that the Penguins are trying to trade Ian Cole, so maybe Jamie Oleksiak is a little bit of insurance for Ian Cole. Like I said before, Reem, I still think the Penguins are a playoff team. I just don't know if they're a Stanley Cup contender anymore. When you look at how the Tampa Bay Lightning are playing in the East, when you look at how the Toronto Maple Leafs are playing in the East, the Devils are better this year. I just don't know if they're a Stanley Cup contender anymore. They've lost four of their last five, including two to the lowly Colorado Avalanche, most recently 4-2 on Monday. They have a big game tomorrow night against the Columbus Blue Jackets. Reem, I want to play a clip of Seth Rorabaugh of the Athletic Pittsburgh. He was on the Don Vito roundtable yesterday, and he was talking about where this Pittsburgh Penguins team is at mentally and physically.
I think there's maybe a bit of a mental fatigue. When you're playing game sevens in Tampa Bay and Ottawa to go to the Stanley Cup final, it's tough to manufacture the same enthusiasm when you're playing, you know, Colorado in early December or Arizona in mid-November. I think that's part of it. And I've even had some players even kind of admit to me off the record that, you know, people here just in this room are maybe just a little bit tired right now of hockey, so to speak. So, and that's not to say they're not playing hard or anything like that. It's just, I just don't sense that, you know, they have the same jump or same enthusiasm that they did maybe 1 year ago or 2 years ago. So, you know, maybe just from that standpoint, bringing a fresh face, a fresh person, who hasn't been through those rigors and, you know, wants to get a run a Stanley Cup might benefit you in that regard too. But, you know, physically too, I wonder where they are physically as a group. I mean, you look at a guy like Carl Hagelin. If you go back to the last 4 years, I think he's played something like 82 or 83 playoff games. So he's played himself an entire extra season, and, you know, just based on playoff time.
It's a lot of mileage.
Yeah, and these off seasons get really, really short when you go all the way. I mean, it's a good problem to have, but it is a problem. So, I just wonder how much wear and tear the Penguins collectively have had over the past two seasons.
You know, Reem, you mentioned it earlier. I don't think anyone's going to argue the high-end skill that this team has with Phil Kessel leading the way right now, but Sidney Crosby and Evgeny Malkin obviously being those superstar centers that are always leading this team. But you heard Seth mention, you know, the amount of games that these guys have played, and I think Seth makes some interesting points there. You know, do you think the amount of hockey that this team has played over the last couple of years, two or three years, is starting to maybe have an effect on them?
You know, I don't know if we can answer that question, Chilean. I do kind of agree that during the year, I mean, you may go through a bit of a lull. I mean, you're a two-time Stanley Cup champion. I think it is tough to keep your foot on the gas, keep that intensity for that long. But, I mean, you look at the teams in the NHL where Pittsburgh stacks up. I think they're definitely still in the conversation in the East. But, you know, on the other hand, maybe teams do go through a bit of a lull when you play that many games. I mean, look at L.A. last year. They had a bit of an off year, but it seems like they had the full offseason, and Anze Kopitar is back to being a top player in the league. Dustin Brown's putting points on the board. Jonathan Quick's playing very well. So they're back on top. And Chicago, I mean, they had a bit of a down year last year, getting bounced in the first round, swept by Nashville. And they've had a bit of a resurgence here. I think there are always going to be questions with Pittsburgh. Are they done? Because people want to see – I think people like to see them, want to see them lose because they've won twice in a row now, and you want to knock them off the top. But I still think as long as they have those guys, I still think they're contenders.
You know, to your point, though, and I agree, not with them being contenders, because I think it's going to be very tough for them this year. We know how hard it is, Reem, to win back-to-back Stanley Cups, let alone three-peat as Stanley Cup champions. And, you know, as we mentioned before, we didn't even mention the Washington Capitals, who have won four games in a row, and they've now won eight of their last 10 games. So when you consider how well Tampa's playing, Toronto, Washington, you even see the New York Islanders right now in that second wild card spot. And anytime that you have players like John Tavares on your team, you know you can easily at least win one playoff round. But you're right. I mean, they've done it time and time again. And with the high-end skill that they have, we know how good Matt Murray is in net. I mean, it's quite possible that I'm wrong and the Pittsburgh Penguins are back in the Stanley Cup final next June. I just think it's going to be really hard for them this year. And I don't think we've seen them struggle this much during the regular season in a long time.
Yeah, and I think this year it seems like every team goes through a bit of a struggle. I mean, you're going to have those ups and downs, and we know Pittsburgh isn't as elite as they were, you know, last year. But I think once, you know, after the new year, I think that's when things really start ramping up, really start going. And I think people are just jockeying for position. And right now, we joke about the, you know, Thanksgiving. If you're in the playoffs, you're in the playoffs. Well, Pittsburgh, I mean, look, they're 2 points out of a playoff spot right now. And I still think they're in striking distance, and you just need to get hot near the end of the year. So as long as you're in the right spot right now, you're okay. But at that East, I mean, I'm looking at who's in right now, and I'm having a hard time seeing who's out to let Pittsburgh in. Does New Jersey fall off? Maybe Boston? Are they legit? But, I mean, Boston's – I mean, I'm really not sure, Ezzy. I mean, there's so many good teams.
Yeah, the East is very good right now. It's hard to say – Which conference is better right now? Clearly last year it was the East, but the West, and specifically the Central, is better this year. Reem, we're going to head to break now. We have our good friend Josh Cooper coming up at 10 o'clock. But before that, next segment, we're going to talk about the Arizona Coyotes. They lost again last night, 3-2. We're going to talk about Rick Tocchet, Coyotes head coach Rick Tocchet, his comments. I thought that they were very surprising about his thoughts on the game and the Arizona Coyotes in general, the players that he has right now on that roster. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290. Welcome back to NHL This Week with the Legal Curve, Ezra Ginsberg, Michael Remus, Rory McGoran, Drew Mandel's on vacation, Sean Asor's taking the night off. This segment of the show is brought to you by Bernstein's Deli, official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey, and home of the Illegal Curve Sandwich. Located in the Cordon Village Mall, Bernstein's Deli has been Winnipeg's deli destination for over 30 years. For more information, find them on Facebook or at bernsteinsdeli.com. Reem, I want to talk about Coyotes head coach Rick Tocchet's comments from last night. The Coyotes lost the game 3-2. They were at home. The record on the season now, if you can believe it, is 7 wins, 24 losses, and 5 overtime losses. They have 19 points. They're dead last in the Western Conference. They're also dead last in the NHL. Their record at home is 3-11-1, if you can believe that. I want to talk about the Coyotes with you, Reem, but first I want to play Rick Tocchet's comments after last night's game.
I just don't understand how we have the game in control and all of a sudden just turns. And we give them two blatant goals, just makes no sense to me. But we'll get it right. Like I said, we're going to weed some people out of here eventually and get this thing right.
Just breakdowns that you're seeing, just mental lapses?
Well, you saw it. I mean, you saw it. I mean, guy turns the wrong way. The guy's not above the guy. It's not winning hockey. Got to get above people. You got to chip bodies. We did in the first period, but it's hard to do it 60 minutes. You know, it's hard to do 20. Anybody can do it 20 minutes, but you got to do it 60 minutes. Like I said, it hurts and it's tough. It's a broken, it's a broken record. You know, I can name 15 games where we had the game in hand and somehow the other team found a way to win and we found a way to lose it.
Wow. So, Reem, I don't know if you watched this game last night, but the Arizona Coyotes were actually up 2-0. Up until late in the second period, Christian Fisher and Derek Stepan scored the first two goals of the game. Nick Bjugstad tied it up, and then the Panthers scored two goals early in that third period and went on to win 3-2. The Panthers needed that win, too. They're trying to stay relevant in that Eastern Conference playoff race. You know, what I thought that was particularly interesting about Tocchet's comments is obviously when he says, we're going to weed some people out of here eventually. You don't hear head coaches of NHL teams say, we're going to weed people out of here eventually. Now, Reem, we know that the Coyotes are horrible. We knew that they weren't going to be very good this year. I guess, what are your thoughts on Tocchet's comments when he's saying that they're going to weed some of those players out?
Yeah, I mean, I think Rick Tocchet is a guy who's frustrated. I mean, you're coaching a team where what can you do when you have a team where Zach Rinaldo is a third-line player? It's really got to be really tough being a fan of the Coyotes and following this team. They're the last couple of years consistently in the bottom of the league. It's almost sad. I mean, no one shows up to the games there. I don't know what's going on, with the future of the franchise, but it's really tough to draw anyone and create any momentum when you're constantly rebuilding. And they do have some nice young players. I mean, Clayton Keller, Joe Haggerty mentioned, could be Rookie of the Year. Max Domi's a good young player, but, I mean, I don't think a team that has Toby Reeder and Brandon Perlini on the first line, that's not a playoff team. That's not even an average hockey team. They have some decent pieces on defense with Oliver Ekman-Larsson, but, I mean, when the Coyotes went through Toronto earlier this year, there were so many rumors about him, being traded, yada yada. It's a real mess there, and it doesn't look like it's going to get better this year.
And Reem, you just mentioned Oliver Ekman-Larsson, and I know that the plus minus stat is arguably one of the worst stats in all of hockey, but Ekman-Larsson is minus 25 right now.
Well, I mean, their team as a whole has the worst goal differential in hockey. I mean, they're minus 45 right now. Next closest is Buffalo, minus 42, and then Ottawa minus 20, and Vancouver minus 20. So, I mean, far and away, Buffalo and Arizona, two teams that have been rebuilding for a couple of years now, easily, by far, the worst teams in the league.
Right, Reem. And, I mean, you could go up and down the Coyotes roster and almost every player on the team is going to be a minus player when you have, as you mentioned, a minus 45 goal differential. Yeah. But specifically Ekman-Larsson, he goes up against the opposing team's top players.
Yeah.
And, that's partially why that plus minus is terrible, not to mention the fact that plus minus statistic doesn't really tell you a player's worth. Ekman-Larsson's arguably a top 20 defenseman in the league. I would argue that he's a top 20 defenseman. Just saying, minus 25, 36 games into the season is shocking. And, going back to Rick Tocchet, I mean, if you're Rick Tocchet, you go from the defending Stanley Cup champions. He was an assistant coach with the Penguins for 3 years. And he's hired by Coyotes GM John Chyka to kind of lead this rebuild. And Reem, could this be going any worse than it is right now?
No. I mean, you're in the bottom of the league. What's worse than bottom of the league? I mean, there's no relegation in the NHL last time I checked, Izzy. Unless we're starting to go to international rules. And And maybe we should.
Yeah, and you know, to your point, Reem, I didn't think the Coyotes were going to be a playoff team this year. I really didn't. I thought they would be a bottom-feeding team. But when you consider that they've only got 7 wins now of 36, I just think it's incredible that in this day and age, especially with, you know, the 3-point games, that you can be this bad. And I think they expected a lot out of Derek Stepan, who they acquired from the New York Rangers, of course. And you mentioned, I mean, Clayton Keller, he's arguably, you know, the top rookie in the NHL right now. He's certainly a top 5 rookie in the NHL. And, you know, Max Domi has struggled at times. And you've seen other players on this team struggle at times. Anthony Duclair, who had a fantastic rookie season 2 years ago, he struggled. He's been a healthy scratch. So you can go up and down this roster, and it's just not very good. And, you know, the promising thing for Coyotes fans is that you've got players like Dylan Strome in the American Hockey League playing for the Tucson Roadrunners. You've got guys like Nick Merkley playing in the AHL right now. Jacob Chychrun is back in the lineup. He missed the first 2 months of the season. He's back. He was a top pick, first rounder, mid of the first round in 2016. But for Rick Tocchet to say we're going to weed some of these players out, I've never heard that in the 9 years of doing this show, or I guess not quite 9 years, 8.5 of doing this show. I've never heard a coach say that, and I'm not sure exactly who he's talking about, to be honest with you, but I think that's just, as you mentioned, a very frustrated coach.
Yeah, he's frustrated, and I mean, it's tough. I mean, I don't know. You look at this forward group, I don't know how you expect to win it at all, and they're not winning. I mean, 7 wins in 36 games. They're on pace for 16 wins, and last year they had 30, the year before 35. It just seems like, you know, I was interested. I found the John Chayka hire as GM very interesting, and it just seems like they keep taking more and more steps backwards. And I don't know if there's going to be that high draft pick this year to rescue them.
And Reem, you know what? You look at this Coyotes team, as you mentioned, and I think the worst part is this year, I just don't see how it gets any better. And you've got a game coming up on Friday night. Tomorrow's Thursday. Friday night, they play the Washington Capitals, who we mentioned earlier are red hot. They've won 8 of their last 10 games. I mean, we talked about this when the Coyotes were in town. You know, do they get to 10 wins? I think at best, maybe they'll probably get to 10, do they even get to 15 wins, right? And, you know, we mentioned some of the prospects they have in the system, but I mean, that's 2, 3, 4 years down the road. And as you mentioned, with the arena issues that they have, the attendance issues that they have, and you've got cities like Seattle, Houston, Quebec City just waiting in the wings for an NHL team, I don't know what John Chyka is going to do, because he already made a splash. And we should mention Nicholas Hjalmarsson is injured right now as well. Nicholas Hjalmarsson was acquired from the Chicago Blackhawks. We mentioned Derek Stepan. They brought him in.
Antti Raanta.
They brought in Antti Raanta. And they're worse than they were last year. So the worst part, I think, if you're a Coyotes fan, or more importantly, if you're a player on this Coyotes team, is you're not getting better anytime soon. It's going to be at least a couple of years before you're better, because you can't expect guys like Dylan Strome and Nick Merkley, you know, necessarily to step in and be everyday players. They're still learning the craft in the AHL. So it's been an absolute gong show nightmare in Arizona this year. And as I mentioned, I think it's just going to get worse. Reem, we're going to head to break now. When we come back, we're going to be joined by our really good friend, Josh Cooper. He's a hockey writer based in Los Angeles. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290. All right, Reem, welcome back to NHL This Week with a Legal Curve on TSN 1290. This segment of the show is brought to you by Dr. Les Rikus and the team at Linden Market Dental Center, official dentist of Illegal Curve Hockey. Don't be an Ezzy. Always wear a mouth guard and give yourself peace of mind protection, as well as facial, teeth, and mouth protection. To make an appointment to get your teeth to ting, visit LindenMarketDentalCenter.com. Let's head to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
We are joined by our very good friend. He's a hockey writer based in Los Angeles. His name is Josh Cooper. Josh, thanks very much for joining us tonight.
No problem. It's a nice reprieve from listening to that song, What Does the Fox Say, with my son. It's a very educational song, actually. I don't know if you ever listened to it.
No, who's that song by?
Oh, it's by some crazy, like, Norwegian pop band. It was, like, a viral sensation, like, 4 years ago, I want to say. It was kind of, I want to say it was pre-Gangnam Style. May have been post, I'm not sure. It was like either before or after Gangnam Style. It was one of the two, I don't know. But it's really funny because it's a really stupid song, but it has all these different things, like the fish go blub and the seal goes ow. So when you have a baby, you're like, okay, you know, I can play this, and maybe he'll pick up a couple things.
You know, Josh, I'm more of a hip-hop guy. I think Reem's more into that Norwegian pop music.
Yeah, that's a nice nice chronology there of the viral pop hits. I was surprised you're not playing Goo Goo Dolls in honor of them being named the band at the 2018 Winter Classic.
I mean, they are from Buffalo, so I personally, I think it makes sense just because of that. But, I mean, it seems like the internet's been roasting the NHL on this. I personally don't have a problem with it. I mean, they're from Buffalo. The Sabres are playing in the Winter Classic. I mean, I can think of, obviously, a lot of New York artists that can play, like New York City, per se, but this is fine. I have no problems with this.
Agreed.
And they were really big in the early 2000s or mid first decade of the 2000s, I want to say.
Josh, we want to get to the LA Kings with you here, but in 60 seconds or less, give us your review of The Disaster Artist.
It was pretty much one of the most refreshing movies I've ever seen, and I'm not just saying that because I'm a massive fan of The Room, which that movie is based off of. It was just a movie that you could tell that the filmmakers were enjoying making, the actors really enjoyed, and they really liked telling the story of The Room, the actors being, in this case, James Franco, Seth Rogen, and Dave Franco, amongst others. And I thought it was fantastic. I think everybody should see this, and I think this should win Oscar for best movie ever.
I still have to see The Room, so I'm not going to see The Disaster Artist before I see The Room. And I know I've seen, you know, some clips on YouTube, and everybody talks about how funny it is. But
what clips?
Based on your recommendation, I think there's some clip where he comes out on the rooftop and he says, "I did not hit her. It was not me.
Hey,
I did not."
No,
like
no spoilers here. Come on.
Hi, Mark.
I got Disaster Artist marked down as my Christmas Day movie, as per tradition.
With obviously Chinese food.
Of course.
Josh.
Well, we all swing that way, so sounds good to me.
Josh, let's get into the Los Angeles Kings. They won their last game a couple of nights ago, 4-1 over the Philadelphia Flyers. They're red hot right now. They've won 7 of their last 10 games. They've only lost 2 of those games in regulation. I want to start off by asking you about Tyler Toffoli. He's been very hot as of late. He's got 2 goals and 3 points in his last 2 games, and this is a player who had a bit of a down year, just like a lot of players on the LA Kings, Kopitar and Dustin Brown included. He's now got 16, which matches his total from all of last year. Is this the Tyler Toffoli that we remember from the last previous years and winning those Stanley Cups? And why is he back to the old Toffoli?
Oh, yeah. I mean, he totally is. And I think that, by the way, he has the most amazing stat line right now of 328 games, 100 goals, and 100 assists even. Like, and he's also a plus 102. So if you take away, like, you know, a plus 2, he'd be a plus 100, which would be 100, 100, 200, 100, which would be amazing. But anyway, beyond that, he really looks like the Tyler Toffoli of old. I mean, just being able to use that kind of sneaky shot of his. He's got a super accurate shot on top of that. Works very hard to get into those tough areas. And, it seems like he's just got that confidence again. It seems like he really has that kind of swagger, and he's back being the player he was. And that's crucial for this team, because one of the things that when Rob Blake took over as general manager last offseason, he said, you know, I think that we'll be okay if Anje Kopitar and Tyler Toffoli can get back to scoring the way that they used to. And not only are they scoring the way they used to, they're playing better than I think they ever have in their careers. So, but you asked about Toffoli, and he just seems like he's getting in the right areas, and he's scoring the timely goals. I remember he had a really, really big goal at the end of overtime against Boston earlier in the season at Boston, and he just looks really good again, and that's crucial for LA because they need him to be that 30-goal guy, because he was trending upwards to such an extreme degree in 2015-16 when he did score 31 goals and was a plus 35, and then completely just was not the same guy last season when he scored 16 goals. But this year just looks like he's back to being that guy, and the Kings, I mean, not just because of him, but certainly in part because of him, have been one of the best stories in the Pacific Division so far this year, or more surprising stories, I should say.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like just about every guy on the Kings was had an off year last year. The biggest guy for me, Anze Kopitar, I mean, he's the real guy that drives the bus for this team. I mean, what has changed from him last year to this year? We're now, I mean, he's 39 points in 35 games this year, just having a career year.
Well, he's just shooting the puck at a much better rate. I'm looking at stats right now. So last season, he had an 8 shooting percentage, which was far and away the lowest of his entire career. This season, he's at 20.5%. Now, it's really hard to expect him to continue to hit at that rate, but this is, I've lived out here now since, I guess, maybe my third year out here, living in Los Angeles and seeing the Kings on a pretty regular basis. This is the best I've ever seen him play. And yes, he has a Selke, he won the Selke trophy after the 15-16 season. But to me, I've just never seen him. You always saw him play and you were like, okay, he's an amazing hockey player. But you wondered if that Daryl Sutter kind of two-way grinding system was going to wear him down a little bit. And it may have done so a little bit last year. Also, in part because he played in the World Cup before the season, won a surprise run with Team Europe, and also played in Olympic qualifiers with Slovenia. And this year, I mean, he just looks like he's so much fresher. He's so much, he has so much more energy. He seems far more relaxed. And again, he's just, when he shoots the puck, he's not missing very often. And another thing I've always found super interesting about watching Anze Kopitar play is just the fact that he has, when he's able to get his shot off, and he has a very quick shot, it has a lot of power behind it. And that's a very underrated part of his game. So he's shooting the puck more. I wouldn't say more, but he's shooting the puck maybe in better percentage areas. And he's scoring more goals. And he's just doing so much at such a high pace, whereas in the past he had to sort of play more along the boards. And you're just seeing him reap the rewards of that to a large degree.
We're joined by good friend of the Curve, Josh Cooper, on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline. Josh, the LA Kings host the Colorado Avalanche tomorrow night at Staples Center, and Marian Gaborik is going to be honored for playing in his 1,000th career NHL game. He's up to 1,002 now, but the Kings were on the road for the last four games. How much does Gaborik have in the tank? And is this a guy that can be a key contributor for them during the regular season and into the playoffs?
Oh, I think he's got a lot left in the tank. I think you've seen it this year. He really, I mean, is he the same dynamic goal scorer that he was earlier in his career? I mean, no, but that's fine because that happens to everyone. I mean, he's 35 years old now. He's not in his early to mid-20s when he was scoring 40 goals, but he's still.
By the way, Josh, I'm 35 years old and I have a lot left in the tank.
Well, me too. Actually, I, and not just that, I've also had some really good running times the last few days. So, I mean, but also I'm not a finely tuned athlete like Marian Gaborik playing against guys in their 20s. But to me, he personally he just seems like he still has that jump. He still has that ability to kind of hit those home runs, so to speak, when you need him to. And that was a big question when he was coming back from last season where he was just really struggled and had injuries, and then the year before where he also just didn't play much and also struggled. And you had to wonder, could he be productive? I mean, Rob Blake and the Kings staff put a lot of faith in him in saying that he was going to come back and that he was going to play. And we were all kind of sitting here thinking like, okay, you know, you had a chance to buy him out and you didn't, but that faith is certainly being rewarded with so far what has been a very, very strong start to the season for Gaborik with 5 goals in his first 13 games. And I think that provided he can stay healthy, he can certainly add some scoring punch to this team.
Josh, Jeff Carter's been out of the lineup since mid-October.
Yeah, forget about that. Crazy to think about that.
He had that scary leg injury. How close is he to returning to the lineup?
I'm not sure. That's not something I'm all super privy to. It just seems like when it happened, it was an injury that was going to take a while, and true to form, it has taken a while. But I think what that injury has done is that it's really, at least in my opinion, enabled some of their younger guys to step up in roles that maybe they wouldn't have been able to play before. A guy like an Adrian Kempe, who's really played pretty solidly in the top six since Carter went out. I mean, is he the same type of player? No, of course not. But he's at least gotten some type of experience that can help him out long-term when he's playing center. And, you've had other guys kind of playing higher up. Alex Iafallo is a guy who's played on the higher lines with Andre Kopitar and Dustin Brown, who has fit in really well there. And it's given guys and some of their depth players more an opportunity, which I think that when Jeff Carter eventually does come back, they'll have some more experience and have some real sort of solid game action under their belt to where, when Carter does come back, they'll probably be in better shape moving forward.
Josh, this is, of course, John Stevens' first year as head coach of the LA Kings, and he was a longtime assistant coach with the Kings, of course. But what have you seen as far as major changes in the way this team plays? Because obviously the results have been a lot better this year.
Well, way more offensive. I mean, 100% way more offensive. And it was interesting in the sense that under Daryl Sutter, and Daryl Sutter, remember, he's won two Stanley Cups, so, I mean, obviously his system has worked, but a lot of their shots, a lot of their attempts were coming not so much from the higher danger areas. They were sort of coming from more of the periphery, so to speak. And under John Stevens, they're getting to the center of the ice more. They're able to sort of get shots on net where there's more net to look at for their players. Whereas I think under Daryl Sutter, you weren't getting that opportunity as much. And on top of that, a lot of their players, or I guess some of their players with offensive talent, have been able to show it a lot more. Like, for example, I mentioned Kopitar. Yes, he had scored a lot under Daryl, but it wasn't quite to this level, nor did he seem as quick or as prolific as he's seemed this year. Drew Doughty's another guy who is on pace for his best season, I think, since his second year in the NHL. I mean, he could hit 60 points, which I don't think he has ever in his career. So, he's looking like, and I've always said about Drew Doughty, and everyone, I always joke around with a lot of people in regards to the Doughty versus Erik Karlsson debate, that if Drew Doughty played in a more offensive system, he'd put up similar numbers. Well, maybe he may not put up the 80 points, but he'd certainly put up more than 45 to 50 points. And we're seeing it this year where he could, again, hit 60 points, if not more. So, I think that's another change under John Stevens. And another thing, too, is, I mean, Daryl Sutter was a very no-nonsense, defensive-minded coach. And, I know that players appreciated a lot of what Daryl Sutter did for their careers, and I know they appreciated the fact that he helped them win two Stanley Cups, but I'm sure that can grind on you a little bit. And Stevens isn't quite the same in regards to that, and I think that players just seem a little looser. And he has a better pulse on this team right now. And that's not to say Daryl didn't at some point, but it seemed like near the end, just it was kind of this slow slog where we kind of knew what was coming. And it just seemed like guys were just kind of playing the system and not really enjoying it. And I think now they're enjoying it a lot more because John Stevens has opened it up.
We're joined by hockey writer Josh Cooper on NHL This Week. Josh, I want to go a little bit south of you and talk about the Anaheim Ducks right now. Ryan Getzlaff is back in the lineup. The Ducks are starting to get healthier, but they're not winning, unfortunately. Can the Ducks get themselves out of this? Because the Ducks are just that team that we always expect to be in the playoffs, and not only in the playoffs, but winning the Pacific Division.
Oh, yeah, I think they definitely can. And, they just have too, A, they have too much talent, and B, I personally do think that when everybody gets back and is healthy, because, look, I mean, they've had a lot of injuries to an incredible amount of key guys. I think that once everybody's healthy, they'll definitely go on a bit of a run. I mean, is it enough to make the playoffs? I don't know, but everything is so bottled up right now. And the other thing, too, to remember about the Ducks is the fact that they legitimately have some of the best depth in the entire National Hockey League, and they're just full to the brim of it. And it's almost like, and that's what kind of enabled them to make that move where they traded Sami Vatanen for Adam Henrique. I mean, they just have so many players in their lineup and up and down their system that I think that as the season goes on, and this is why the Ducks have gone on some runs late in the year the last few years, is the fact that they just have so many players they can just throw out there that can give guys a rest when you really hit the dog days of the NHL season. So I absolutely would definitely, absolutely 100% not count out the Anaheim Ducks. I think they're still a force to be reckoned with. Are they a team that can win the Stanley Cup? I'm not so sure about that, but they certainly have an incredible amount of depth. They certainly, I think that when Ryan Kesler comes back and they get a lot of guys back in their lineup, they should be in pretty good shape. I mean, they've made the Western Conference Final, I want to say it's, what, two of the last 4 years? So they're clearly doing something right. I mean, I think that anything can happen, and they certainly have enough talent to make it happen.
He's a hockey writer based in L.A., and he's also our resident movie and TV critic. Josh Cooper, thanks very much for joining us tonight on NHL This Week. Take care, and we'll talk to you in 2018.
You didn't want to ask me about the biggest spoiler in The Last Jedi?
Okay, what's the spoiler in The Last Jedi?
That Luke is really Admiral Ackbar.
What? Seriously?
It's a trap. No.
I don't even know what that... I'm not up to date on the Star Wars. I saw Rogue One. It was great. So maybe I'll see this one.
I personally really liked it. But, I mean, their opinions seem to be all over the map on this movie. But I really enjoyed it. And even listened to a two-hour Star Wars podcast afterwards just to try to get my fill of it.
Josh, it's a little late tonight, so I don't think we're going to be able to check it out. But maybe Remo and I will check it out on the weekend, the new Star Wars movie.
But see Disaster Artist first.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll see Disaster Artist in the room first.
Order of things. Josh Cooper order of things. Disaster Artist first, Star Wars second, and then get ready for Ari's Quest for Love and The Bachelor on January 1st.
That's a lot of watching right there. We got to watch hockey.
Dude, I have a freaking newborn. I have, like what do you want from me?
That's true. I can't complain. Josh, take care. Thanks again for joining us tonight.
All right, bye.
All right, let's head to break. When we come back, we are going to reveal Michael Remus's five greatest moments in NHL history. You're going to want to stay tuned for this. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290.
Exactly. They need a big game from the view because once a team...
Lemieux centering. Score! Mario Lemieux centering pass. Tit for tat. Hope checked away. Lemieux's out in front on the right. Broughton trying to cut the angle off. Lemieux and Broughton. Lemieux in. Score! That's a Mario Lemieux goal. His seventh shorthanded goal of the year. And Pittsburgh leads it 2-1. 5-on-3 power play for the Pittsburgh Penguins here. And they've got the full 2 minutes. Score! Mario Lemieux, the perfect trick. It's a perfect hat trick, 3 in the first period, and we're only halfway through his fourth hat trick of the year. Lemieux. That's it! He has equaled his high in points in a game. 4 goals for Mario Lemieux, a penalty shot. 6-4 Pittsburgh. Caulfield has Lemieux. He got it to him. 2 seconds. He shoots. He scores. And look out!
He's the magnificent one, Mario Lemieux. Welcome back to NHL This Week. And in honor of Mario Lemieux's 5 goals in 5 different ways being named the greatest moment in NHL history on Saturday night at the 2017 Scotiabank NHL 100 Classic in Ottawa, we're going to introduce Michael Remus's 5 greatest moments in NHL history. This segment of the show is brought to you by Frank and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty, official realtors of Illegal Curve Hockey. When 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and a total dedication to client satisfaction. For all of your real estate needs, come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia online at zappiagroup.com. Okay, Reem, I know that you're a big fan of Mario Lemieux, but we're going to get your top 5 greatest moments in NHL history. And this is in no particular order, okay?
That's correct.
Okay, so give us number 5.
Number five, 2001 Stanley Cup Finals. Ray Bourque in the Colorado Avalanche win the Stanley Cup, and Joe Sakic gives Ray Bourque the Stanley Cup after being presented to it by Gary Bettman.
You like that?
I thought it was a great
really?
Moment.
Really, you're going to pick that? I'm a Devils fan. They beat the Devils.
Look, Ray Bourque was one of the greatest defensemen ever. Had a great career. The whole playoffs were revolving around him being traded from Boston to Colorado. I thought it was a great moment, and you know what? I looked at the NHL's great moment bracket, and it was on there, so I don't think I'm out of line putting that on my list.
No, in all honesty, Reem, I love that. Ray Bourque, one of the greatest defensemen of all time. He was on some pretty bad Boston Bruins teams. He only went to the Stanley Cup Final once with the Bruins, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah. He didn't get to the Stanley Cup Final very often, and obviously that was a big trade back in 2001, so I like that one. Okay, Reem, give us number four.
Number four, and this is kind of related to number five, and they go hand in hand, and you can kind of tell what era I grew up watching hockey. But I'm going with Steve Yzerman's goal in double overtime over John Casey's shoulder. One, it was in double overtime in the playoffs to win a series, which is excellent. It was an unbelievable slap shot, and I love slap shot goals, so that's why I'm a big fan of Brian Ralston. But everybody remembers and the celebration.
That view from behind the net and seeing Yzerman's shot slowly rise into the top corner. It's one of the most famous goals of all time.
Yeah, and I think, you know, those two moments go hand in hand because, you know, in the late 90s, early 2000s, you had the Red Wings and Avalanche dynasties. And later on in that playoffs, that was the 96 playoffs, the Avalanche played the Red Wings. And that really started off their rivalry and, you know, led to some fantastic games. So I could have picked so many just relating to Avalanche or Red Wings. I think both of them had to be in there. Now, I mean, Detroit didn't win the Stanley Cup that year. But, I mean, there were so many questions about Yzerman. Could he get it done in the playoffs? Was he the guy? And they lost that year to Colorado, but they ended up eventually winning two in a row.
Yeah, they won in 97. They won in 98. Yeah. They won in 2002. That was really, I think, the beginning of Steve Yzerman's run of incredible play in the playoffs.
And the year before, they had lost. I mean, they finally got there, and they lost to the Devils. See, there you go. There's the Devils. They lost to the Devils, and I think there were a lot of questions about them again. But that was just an unbelievable goal.
We should give a shout-out also to Stevie Yzerman for his performance in the 2002 Olympics in Salt Lake City.
Yes.
I mean, he was a huge part of that team alongside guys like Mario Lemieux,
Sakic,
Jerome Iginla, Sakic, Chris Pronger, Martin Brodeur. The list goes on and on and on.
That's the best team ever.
I think so. I think the 2010 team is up there as well. Okay, Reem, we have about 4 minutes left here in the segment. Number three.
Okay. Can I do an honorable mention one?
Sure.
This isn't part of my top five, but I really like this one. 2009 Stanley Cup Final. Max Talbot scores both goals for the Penguins to win.
I like it.
You know what? I don't care that Max Talbot isn't in the NHL and his career kind of fizzled out after. If you score two goals in a Game 7 and you're a third or fourth line guy, that is awesome. So I'm cheering, giving honorable mention to Max Talbot. But as far as top moments in NHL history, I got to go back. A lot of these are going to be in the playoffs, but I got to go back to the 1999 Stanley Cup Final. Brett Hull scores the game winner in overtime for the Dallas Stars, but was his foot in the crease? And as we know, Ken Hitchcock ushered the Dallas Stars off the ice so quickly before they could even review it. And that was the year where, if you had your toe in the corner of the blue paint that had nothing to do with the goal, they were waving it off. And that's why it's so controversial.
Reem, first of all, going back to Max Talbot, I agree. That was a great moment in Stanley Cup playoff history. He's still playing hockey, by the way. He's in the KHL. So
Is he in Team Canada for the Olympics? I don't know if he is.
If players from the KHL are allowed to go. So shout out to Max Talbot, still going strong. As far as the Brett Hull goal in the 1999 Stanley Cup Final, you're right. I mean, at the time, technically, it was a violation of the crease rule, but let's be honest. I mean, it was a goal. But again, hopefully that doesn't happen with the new offside and goaltender interference rules. Because I'm still worried the way it's being called right now, we're going to run into some problems come playoff time. Okay, Reem, we've got a couple minutes here. Your two greatest moments in NHL history, we've got two left. Okay, what's number two?
I'll go fast. Number two, Wayne Gretzky getting traded from the Oilers to the Kings. I mean, a huge moment. It's not exactly in a game, but I think a huge moment for NHL history. I think it got a lot of development created hockey in the South and increased hockey's popularity in the States. Huge trade.
I like that.
Not too often you see the best player in the league, maybe the best player ever, depending on your list, getting traded. So it was pretty incredible moment for hockey.
There's no doubt, Reem, that it changed the face of hockey. I mean, you could argue that if Wayne Gretzky doesn't go to L.A., there might not be hockey in Anaheim, San Jose, Tampa Bay, Vegas.
Arizona.
So, I mean, it was a transformational trade in the history of hockey. Number one, we have one more left. Drum roll.
1993. Timo Solani breaks Mike Bossy's rookie scoring
record.
And not the breaking the record, but the celebration.
Right.
I think it was this, I mean.
With Dallas Eakins catching the glove.
I don't think that record will ever be broken. I mean, 76 goals by a rookie, pretty incredible. But just that iconic celebration of him, throwing the glove up and shooting it. I mean, this is a Winnipeg hockey show, Ezra. I have to pick a Winnipeg Jets moment as number one. So I'm going to go with that. Yeah,
I love it.
Let's give him a round of applause.
Those were Michael Remus's five greatest moments.
The definitive five greatest
Definitive five greatest moments in NHL history. We're going to head to break. When we come back, we're going to be joined by Dan Duva, Vegas Golden Knights radio broadcaster. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290. Welcome back to NHL This Week. I'm Ezra Ginsberg, joined by Michael Remus and producer Rory. Let's head to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We're pleased to be joined by Vegas Golden Knights broadcaster Dan Duva on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline. Dan, good evening. Thanks very much for joining us.
Oh, my pleasure. Good to be with you guys.
Okay, Dan, we got to start off with last night's big win over the Tampa Bay Lightning. Just take us back to that finish, Shea Theodore's goal, and that big win at home over the best team in the NHL right now.
I first have to tell you, I've seen a lot of hockey professionally, playoffs and regular season. That has got to be the best regular season hockey game, and I mean from start to finish. No doubt a lot of exciting moments for the Vegas Golden Knights this year in terms of finishes and big wins, but start to finish, an excellent hockey game, like two heavyweights throwing haymakers back and forth. And for Vegas to be trailing 2-0, they come back and take a 3-2 lead. Tampa Bay ties it at 3-3, and then, believe it or not, a power play for Vegas, already with three power play goals in the game, and they became the third team in the NHL this year to score four power play goals in the game, and it's Shea Theodore, who had a four-point night, three power play assists, and of course the power play goal with 2.3 seconds left. Some of those penalties in the waning moments were controversial. There were a couple of non-calls, and then there were a couple of calls that were made, including that holding the stick minor that led to the Vegas power play in the last moments of regulation. And Vegas's power play had not been doing very well lately, and then they go and score four times. But it's a left circle face-off to the right of Andre Vasilevsky, and there's a tie-up in the corner. James Neal's going to it. Eric Howell is down there. Howell finally fishes it out, got it to the top of the left circle for Jonathan Marchessault. So he whipped it across to Shea Theodore at the right point, and he beat Andre Vasilevsky with 2.3 on the clock. And for an atmosphere that was off the charts from all accounts, the Tampa Bay and Vegas fans alike made it a special, special environment. And Vegas comes out on top. Again, one of the best hockey games I've ever seen in the regular season.
Dan, I have to ask you, you look at the record now, Vegas 22-9-2, first in the Pacific Division. I mean, for expansion team, how much have the expectations changed now since the beginning of the season?
Well, colossally different than what might have been anticipated. And the questions that most people have asked regarding the roster: okay, here's James Neal, last year of a six-year contract expiring at the end of the season. He would have been likely bait for a trade come the deadline when a contender might need a pick and unload some draft choices, and that's what George McPhee wants, draft choices, to make sure that this team is competitive down the line. But the not only moderate success, but really overwhelming success. I mean, you mentioned the division lead, but they've got the best record in the Western Conference. And if you look at points percentage, right, not necessarily the points, but the points percentage, even going into the game last night, Tampa was number one, Nashville was number two, and Vegas was number three. We're talking about a team that has not just put itself in good position to compete for a spot, but they're odds on to make a playoff spot now. So I don't think that that idea of trading off pieces at the deadline will come to fruition. They are definitely in a mindset of our goal is to win. And while that process might have been accelerated, given the unlikely start, I think that the expectations at the beginning of the season where they are now have simply moved the timeline ahead. So this is a group that expects to compete and certainly make a playoff berth, and then who knows what happens after that. You can only imagine after this great start, then you throw Marc-Andre Fleury back into the lineup after missing a couple months with a concussion. It makes a very solid team even more confident in itself.
We're joined by Vegas Golden Knights radio play-by-play voice Dan Duva on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, the Sicilian soundbite. Dan, we have to ask you about Marc-Andre Fleury. He's been back now for three games after missing about 2 months out with that injury. Has he missed a beat? He's won his last two starts, and he looks like, you know, Marc-Andre Fleury of old.
Yeah, I would agree. I don't see any chinks in his armor whatsoever. He is the same person, number one. You know, even when he's not around the team for a couple of months, he made a conscious effort to stay tight with his teammates. I think that goes a long way so that when you do come back, you're not having to adjust to the game and your teammates. You're only fighting the adjustment to NHL pace hockey. And he has those skills. They have not diminished from my eye. But he's also got the wisdom. And now he's 33 years old. He communicates so well. The one thing that had to be adjusted was the defensemen in particular, his teammates that go back to retrieve the puck, and how they communicate with Marc-Andre Fleury. And Marc-Andre Fleury plays the puck as well as any goalie in the NHL, I think. He's quick to it. Against Pittsburgh, he made an aggressive dive poke check to knock the puck out of the zone and way out in the right wing circle. The other goalies who were filling in for Fleury did none of that. Malcolm Subban and Oscar Dansk and Max Legace were very conservative around their net and playing the puck. If it came near them, they'd cover it and get a whistle. The teammates have to adjust to that. It took him a game. I think it did take him a game to figure that out. And that, of course, was the shootout loss against Carolina. But then by the time the Pittsburgh game arrived, you better believe that Marc-Andre Fleury rose to the occasion. And then another rising to the occasion, Andre Vasilevskiy is among the very best young goalies in the league, and they went back and forth. Vasilevskiy kept Tampa Bay in a game that I thought Vegas had better chances. But Fleury has been everything you would hope him to be when he's been healthy.
Dan, you look at Vegas' record at home, 14-2-1. On the road, 8-7-1. There was an article on ESPN today about the Vegas flu. I mean, what makes this team so much better at home on the road? And how do you feel about the Vegas flu? Is it real or is it a myth?
Yeah, well, I mean, it's funny is that the word flu is used because some of the Tampa Bay Lightning players had the real flu. Tyler Johnson and Jake Dotchin were a couple players unavailable for the Lightning because they had the real flu. And I saw Tyler Johnson before the game. I did not have an inkling that he wouldn't play, but, you know, that's just how it goes sometimes. With a group of people travel together and they're in such close proximity, the bug goes around. In terms of the Vegas flu, so to speak, listen, it's a fun thing to toss around, but if you watch a game in this building and you see the Vegas Golden Knights compete against the opponents, I think I can understand the idea, but it's gotten to the point where it's almost insulting now that, oh, this team is only succeeding at home because opposing players are coming in and they're not taking care of their job. They're having too much fun. I think it's funny, but it's far from true. I've been around professional hockey players for, let's see, 5, 8, 9, almost 10 years now and just traveling with a team. And I could tell you that pro hockey players have a good time no matter what city they're going to when they want to. They also know how to do their job. They wouldn't be pros if they couldn't do that. So don't get me wrong. I'm sure plenty of the visiting teams are enjoying their time here. But Tampa Bay got here on Saturday. You know, they had Saturday night, Sunday night, and Monday night before the game on Tuesday. Listen, it is not success for the Golden Knights because other teams aren't taking care of themselves in the city. I do think it's kind of funny, but at the same time, it's bordering on insulting to the fact that this club has succeeded in the way that it has. All you have to do is watch the team play in person. You don't need me to try to argue that the Vegas flu is just silly. You watch the team play in person, or even on television, to see how they play. It's a balanced roster. The time on ice is spread from the top line to the fourth line. Gerard Gallant trusts all four lines so that he keeps these players fresh late in games. They have the ability to punch you in the face in the opening minutes, but they also have the ability to fight from behind in the late moments. They've had so many dramatic victories. It's just a fun team to watch. And when you saw Tampa Bay and Vegas go head-to-head yesterday, even though the Lightning were without Jake Dodgson and Tyler Johnson, no doubt about it, that hurts the Lightning. Two of their more important players, Johnson especially on the penalty kill. Dodgson is normally Victor Hedman's D partner. But there are so many contributors on the Vegas side. Night after night, you don't know who the hero is going to be. Yesterday turned out to be Shea Theodore, who in his entire NHL career, which is only a season or so, he had three career multi-point games, 2 points in each of them. They had 4 points yesterday. So just goes to show that this is a team that really does, I know it's a cliche, but they work for each other. They do make each other better, and any night, anybody might step up and help the team win.
You know, Dan, you talk about the balance throughout the lineup, and there are definitely no shortage of players on this Golden Knights roster that are putting together some great seasons. You think about Jonathan Marchessault leading the team in points. James Neal's got 17 goals. William Karlsson's not that far behind with 15 goals. Eric Hall is a guy, though, that I don't think enough people are talking about. He's on a 7-game point streak right now. He's got 5 goals and 10 points in his last 7 games. He had another goal and an assist yesterday. This is a guy who was a regular in the Wild lineup for 4 years. Is Eric Hall just another example of a player who didn't work out with his former team, who's now really excelling for this Golden Knights team?
Yeah, you raised all the points that I would raise, too. And yes, the stories have been James Neely would have thought at the beginning. Of course, he did not play the regular season, so when he played in Dallas and scored both goals late to beat Dallas in the first game of the season, oh, here comes James Neal on the contract here. Okay, then William Karlsson emerges. He's, for a while, had the team-leading goals until James Neal is recently pushed ahead of him. Riley Smith has been very consistent, though he has not sparkled in the dramatic way that some others have. Because he plays in every situation and he's so reliable, Riley Smith is probably been the best player all around, but that brings us to Eric Halla as the most recent impressive forward. And he missed a few games because of injury, but he came back. And you mentioned the scoring streak. Not only that, you know, he scored 10 third-period goals this year. That's one more than Nikita Kucherov, by the way, and it's tied for the NHL lead, 10 third-period goals. And he had the tying goal. The go-ahead goal, it ended up being a tie score. But he put Vegas ahead 3-2 on a tip-in on the power play. And that was against Tampa last night. But the game before that, he had a beautiful tip-in on a Jonathan Marchessault turnaround point shot. And the puck would have went about 5 feet wide of the net. But Halla put himself to be alert and to reach in and have the perfect redirection to tip it into the net, which led to that was the game-winning goal. So he's not only been very good at face-off circle, centering James Neal and David Perron. He's an anchor for that group. But he's found those big plays in the most clutch moments. He's got a personality that he's not quite as gregarious as Nate Schmidt, but he does have a terrific personality when you get to talk to him for a while. And Nate Schmidt and Eric Halla were teammates in college at the University of Minnesota, and they were roommates there for a while, and they were actually roommates here for a little while until they got their permanent residences settled. But he's got a great personality, and he's found a way to contribute not only in the way that allows the team to be balanced, but those players who come up with the clutch plays. Jonathan Marchessault has fit into that as well, along with James Neal. That's what takes a very good player and makes him a great player. And frankly, over the course of the last handful of games, you mentioned the scoring streak now at 7, he's been great.
You know, Dan, earlier we talked about, you know, this recent winning streak that the Golden Knights are on. They've won their last three. They're 7-2-1 in their last 10. As you mentioned, they're first in the Western Conference right now, not that far behind the Tampa Bay Lightning for first overall in the NHL. At what point do we just say that not only is Vegas going to be a playoff team, but Vegas is an elite team? I think it sounds ridiculous for some people, but you look at how they've played here in the first 36 games of the year, and they just keep winning.
Yeah, they are not the star names that you have on some other clubs. And, of course, you see Steven Stamkos and Nikita Kucherov come to town. Pittsburgh comes in with Sidney Crosby, Evgeny Malkin, and Phil Kessel. And so it's easy to look at some of the big names and presume that the players that we know so well, because they've had success, because they've had stellar careers, those are going to be the teams to watch. No doubt. I mean, and that's why those teams have had success. But when you've got a collection of players who've never been together before, you find that there's just a certain something, call it chemistry, call it synergy, call it teamwork. And this is, especially with Marc-Andre Fleury as an ultra-reliable backstop, it's not an up-and-comer unproven. You've got a three-time Stanley Cup champion, Marc-Andre Fleury, as your goalie. I think that that alone puts this group, because of where the standings are right now, you can't ignore them. Just where the standings are, and Fleury, they'd have to be considered in that way. Once you get in, it's been a crapshoot. We know regular season success results in inconsistent postseason performances. Just ask the Washington Capitals, who coincidentally come to Vegas on Saturday, Georgia McPhee's old club, and Georgia's fingerprints remain on the Capitals up and down that roster. But you're right. I think that because we're at that point in the season, you know, 33 games in, it's not quite the halfway mark. You're getting there. It's starting to feel like hockey season. Even the temperature in Las Vegas has dipped a little bit. So I think that when things start to shake out a little bit more, maybe, you know, closer to the trade deadline, you'll get a real appreciation for what's happening here. I mean, over the last eight games, they've got 15 out of 16 points. Sure, Tampa Bay had a seven-game winning streak, but over Tampa's last eight games, they've got 14 out of 16 points. In other words, right now, the Golden Knights are playing the best hockey in the NHL by points. I think that this stage of the year, close out this five-game homestand against the Capitals, if they can win that one, you know, just imagine what it'll be like going to play first the Ducks, but then going to Los Angeles to play the Kings in L.A. for the first time on the 28th. Kings had come to Vegas, but this is the first time Vegas is going there. And then, of course, the big matchup on New Year's Eve, 12:30 Pacific time, when the Toronto Maple Leafs, that is going to be really something. So see if they can continue this momentum. And the way they're playing right now, the confidence is where it needs to be. They believe that this is not just a fluke, of course. That has been put aside weeks ago. And now it's the tests against the NHL's best. And having recently beaten both the Penguins and the Lightning, and the week before that, Dallas and Nashville on the road, they are not only competitive, they are passing those tests with flying colors.
The Vegas Golden Knights will be back in Winnipeg on Thursday, February 1st, and I know I speak for a lot of hockey fans, Dan, when I say we're looking forward to that game, because the Vegas Golden Knights have to be one of the best stories, if not the best story in the NHL this year. Thank you very much for joining us tonight on NHL This Week.
Oh, my pleasure. Anytime. And you know, just to add to that, when you watch the Golden Knights, it's not only because it's a great story, but the way they play, it's just a fun brand of hockey to watch. And that was the case last night. And I wouldn't be surprised if we see that on display come February when Vegas heads up there.
Yeah, we definitely agree with you, Dan. Take care. Merry Christmas and happy holidays to you and yours.
Thanks. Same to you guys.
All right, we're going to head to break now. We've got one final segment. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290. Final segment of the night. It's flown by, Remo. It's almost 11 o'clock.
I kind of like it. I like the nighttime shows, Huss. It's fun. Ezzy.
Thanks, Rick. This segment of the show is brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, officially declared the funniest place in Winnipeg by Illegal Curve Hockey. For 30 years, Rumors has been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit rumorscomedyclub.com. Kevin Bozeman from Chicago is playing at Rumors for four more nights. His last night is this Saturday night before he heads home on Christmas Eve. We were out bowling with him on Monday night, Kevin, or as he likes to be called, KB.
Yeah, how'd you guys do? Little five-pin. They don't have five-pin in the States.
It was his first time playing five-pin. I actually won the second game. I think I bowled like a 176, which isn't that good because we were also having a few bevies. But KB is a pretty good little bowler.
Yeah, you get a little popcorn at the bowling alley?
Didn't have any popcorn.
Kevin
got chicken wings. I had a couple of beers, maybe four or five beers. I forget. But great times. Love five-pin bowling. So go check out Kevin Bozeman. He's playing for the rest of this week. Last night is Saturday night. He's a great comedian. He's been playing at Rumors for the last 2 weeks. He's a regular.
Wow, 2 weeks.
He's a favorite there. So go check him out, rumorscomedyclub.com. Reem, we've got one final segment here. I want to talk about the Ottawa Senators. The Ottawa Senators lost again last night. I don't know if you caught that game, but they were leading that game 3-1 in the second period. They ended up losing 6-4 to the Minnesota Wild. The Senators are now second last in the Eastern Conference with 29 points. The attendance at last night's game was 13,804. That's the fifth lowest of the season. It seems to just be getting worse and worse for the Senators. I want to play a clip here of Darren Dreger on TSN 1200, The Drive. He's talking about Ottawa Senators general manager Pierre Dorion and whether or not he thinks he can make any more moves. We already saw him acquire Matt Duchene this year. Here's Dregs on TSN 1200 talking about some potential moves that the Senators might make coming up.
The wheels came completely off, but Dorion has made it abundantly clear to every single rival NHL general manager that he is open for business. But that doesn't mean that he's given players away or, he's, in the market to take on a bad contract for a player that isn't doing much in Ottawa. I mean, it has to be the right fit, but you don't find the right fit, unless you're as active as he's been of late.
And when you are that active, you're 10 points out of a playoff spot, and with where your season is at, playoffs, such a long shot. Do you view a trade at this point of anything other than a panic move?
No, I think you're bang on. And look, because of where the Ottawa Senators are positioned in the standings, there's nobody, trying to throw out a life preserver here. They're all anchors. So any rival manager who's got interest in a player that Dorion is willing to part with isn't giving top market value in return, because he's thinking that, Dorion is working through panic or he's got to make a move through desperation because knowing what we know of the marketplace, I think we've seen and heard a fair bit from the owner, Eugene Melnyk, of late. There's a belief out there that there's a ton of pressure on the general manager to do whatever he can to ensure that this club.
Okay, Reem, that's Darren Dreger on our sister station, TSN 1200, talking about the Ottawa Senators. We talked about it. I mean, let's be honest, Reem, the Ottawa Senators are not going to the playoffs this year. They're going to be sellers prior to the trade deadline coming up in about 2 months. So do you just wait until then to make some moves? Because we know that most likely it's not getting any better anytime soon.
Yeah, they're not getting the goaltending that they got last year from Craig Anderson, who was exceptional. Erik Karlsson still hasn't fully recovered from his ankle injury. It's really tough in Ottawa. I mean, their goal differential among the worst in the East. So I think, you do wait until you get closer to the deadline or even before if someone wants to pay a premium and you trade, the pending UFAs, you do the standard thing and you start looking towards next year.
And Reem, do we actually expect Ottawa to make any significant trades between now and the end of February? They've already made their big move, right? They brought in Matt Duchene and it quite simply has not made them better. And Matt Duchene has got 2 goals in 18 games with the Senators. It's incredible. And I agree with you. I mean, you've got, issues in goal. You've got issues on defense. Dion Phaneuf has looked horrible this year, by the way. And he looked awful last night versus the Minnesota Wild. Dion Phaneuf is making a lot of cake.
Yeah, he's making $7 million until the end of 2021.
And he's got 3 goals in 32 games, even though Phaneuf is not necessarily known for his offense at this point in his career. But, Bobby Ryan's got 3 goals in 24 games. Derek Brassard has struggled this year. I mean, really, with the exception of Mark Stone and Mike Hoffman, and Erik Karlsson, as we mentioned, who isn't having a great year by his standards, this just isn't a very good team. And I definitely think that this team could be better, but you wonder if you just try to sell off whatever you can, you know, come January, February, and then just start planning for next year. I mean, we know that the Senators have a lot of good prospects in the system. Thomas Chabot, he's in the lineup right now. His first year in the National Hockey League, he's played 13 games. And you've got Colin White and, you know, Alex Fermenten. I mean, they have some good prospects in the system, but wow, this Senators team has fallen mightily from the team that almost went to the Stanley Cup final last year. That's going to do it tonight for us on NHL This Week. Remo, thanks for jumping on with us.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
It's been a great 2017. We'll be back in 2018. We're off next week because there's a Moose game. I want to thank producer Rory. I want to thank our guests tonight, Josh Cooper, Dan Duva. And in the first hour, we had Boston Bruins insider Joe Haggerty on the show. Big shout out to our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, Bernstein's Deli, Zappia Group Realty, and Keener Jerseys. Support these fine companies because they support the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Until Saturday at 7 in the morning, yes, we're on at 7 in the morning on Saturday, you're listening to NHL This Week with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.